Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources for April 19th, 2017. And we have a public hearing, the continuation of the presentation by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we're looking at House Bill 5010. So if we could have the Fish and Wildlife folks come forward, and Kathy with them, I guess. Kathy's got just the two of you, okay?
Mr. Chair, I just note for the record that the presentation they're using is on OLIS under March 27th, and it's the agency presentation. And the KPMs are going to start on page 93 of the presentation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It's a pleasure to be here today. I think we left off with you in late March, about a little over 3 weeks ago, and had a few slides left to complete our presentation. We want to go over those with you here today. So picking up where we left off with our key performance measures, we have eight key performance measures that are identified as part of our agency budget. I'm going to go through each of those individually. This slide just shows a summary that covers the gamut of some of our operations. So our first key performance measure is a hunting license, key performance measure related to hunting license purchases. This is as a function of per capita. So you'll see that for the last decade or 12 years, we've had a target of achieving 10% of eligible hunters, eligible residents between the age 12 and 69 years old. And we're really just holding steady at about a little over 8% of the per capita population purchasing hunting licenses, as opposed to our targeted level of 10%. Our second key performance measure, similar analog on the fish side, is again a per capita angling license purchase. And you'll see that over the last half decade or so, we've been generally stable in terms of per capita sales. However, that's well below, and that's at about 17% of the statewide population purchasing fishing licenses, and that is well below our key performance measure target of about 22%. Our third key performance measure is a measure of wildlife damage. So our field staff responds to wildlife damage complaints. Our key performance measure is not just a flat line, it's a decreasing line, and that is because we hope that over time our efforts through education of landowners and producers would lead to lower damage complaints, and we have in fact seen that with a general downward trend over the last decade or so. And this is a case where being below the line is actually a good thing. It means we're achieving at a higher level than the targeted reduction.
If you don't mind, I want to go back to the two previous ones.
Absolutely, Senator.
I'm wondering whether you have it by geography. In other words, are we talking about where are the licenses coming from? Do we have an increase or a decrease in particular parts of the state?
Sure. Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. I think that information can be essentially mined out of our license database, but it's not a routine assessment that we've been doing. I think, though, it's pretty clear that, and I will say this, that based on anecdote, that we still see a much higher proportion of residents in rural areas participating versus the urban areas.
But I am curious now, when you get a license, do you have to be an Oregon resident to get a license? You don't have to. Right.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. No, we have non-resident license sales, but this key performance measure is exactly indication of resident participation.
Right. Okay. That's what I was curious about. I wanted to see whether we were seeing an increase, along around I-5 and other places, and just to see what was going on there. That's good to know. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And one last thing. You had the spike there in 2011. Do you know what was going on there?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, do not. We may be able to tease some of that out, but at this point, I don't have that off the top of my head.
Not that important. I just was curious. Thank you.
Sure. Our next key performance measure is the percent of fish species of concern that are monitored. Fish species of concern would be species that are either on the state sensitive species list or on the threatened and endangered species list. Our targeted key performance measure or rate is to be monitoring 90% of those populations or of those species. You'll see that we're at about 80% or just above 80% of the species of concern monitored.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many species are we looking at? How many in number?
Sure. Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Representative Esquivel. It's certainly measured in the dozens. I think total statewide species of concern, either on the sensitive species list or on the endangered or threatened species list, numbers about 110. A similar key performance measure on the wildlife side of the program, which is, again, percentage of species of concern that are monitored. You'll see that we have a targeted level of 50%, and that target is basically increasing. We are our goal over time is to increase that percentage of populations or percentage of species that are monitored, and we're currently at about 54% of those wildlife species. Key performance measure six is a measure of our efforts working with landowners to screen diversions, that is to install mechanical devices, if you will, that prohibit or prevent fish from entering diversions and being diverted out of the waterway and into other environments. So you'll see over time our objective, of course, over time is to make incremental progress in this program, and we continue to do that. Again, this is an example where being below the red line means you're actually ahead of our projected key performance measure. Key performance measure seven is a customer service performance measure, and this is based on a survey of customers who enter our offices or purchase licenses or seek information. Our targeted performance level is that at least 92% of customers are or find the department accurate, find that the availability of information is good or excellent, that we have a high level of expertise, helpfulness, timeliness. And you'll see that actually for the first time in 2016, all of those customer service measures actually met or exceeded the targeted level of 92%. And the last key performance measure that we'll talk about here today is key performance measure eight, which is a self-assessment that the commission takes. A series of questions that the commission answers on best management practices and best operational practices for the commission. Of course, we have a target of 100% on that, and you'll see that we've been solidly in the 90% range for the last several years. And with that, I would just conclude, and obviously this is a little late in the date for conclusion since we had our other presentations about 3 weeks ago, but overall, this agency budget is essentially a current service level budget. We want to be rigorous in remaining within our planned or projected revenues. Represents the governor's recommended budget, roughly a 10% general fund cut, and very importantly for us, really begins the process of with some rigor addressing our deferred maintenance needs. And Mr. Co-Chair, that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any more questions or hand it over to Kathy Conley.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Melcher, why do we do our objectives under 100%? Shouldn't we strive for 100%? Especially in customer satisfaction?
Yeah. Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, I think certainly we strive for 100% satisfaction. The key performance measure objectives are established through the budget setting, through the budgeting process. But I think to expect 100% satisfaction is probably unreasonable. I think any business would tell you that 100% satisfaction is difficult to achieve, and so the 92% has been a long-standing target. I'm not sure what other agencies use, but that's been our target.
Representative Witt?
Kurt, of the species of concern, without putting you on the spot, do you have any idea how many of those are threatened and endangered?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, off the top of my head, I do not. We certainly do, and we could follow up with that information if you like.
Okay, and do we have a sense of, you know, of the threatened and endangered, how many we reasonably feel that we can delist at some future date? Half of those? Third of them?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I think we are of the belief that most of these species can be delisted, and I'll cite you several examples. Bald eagles,
yes,
recently delisted,
yes,
not just on the state act, but federally. Stellar sea lions, delisted, not to be confused with California sea lions,
right.
Although they were never listed, and nor should they be. Oregon chub, mm-hmm, first fish in the nation that's been delisted, and we achieved that here. We've got several fish species. In fact, the commission will be talking about them this week in Klamath Falls. Foskett Springs dace and drawing a blank on the other species, but two again minnow type species in south central Oregon that are at or soon to be proposed for delisting. We're proposing to delist them under the state act right now, and we think the feds are going to be behind us fairly soon as well.
Well, that's encouraging. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. Kurt, the questions I have concern the key performance measures 1 and 2, and I have a concern overall that the number of fishermen are tapering off as are the number of hunters, and therefore the revenues in ODF&W just really, it's not kind of a stable fund. Do you know off the top of your head anything that we can do to promote that? I mean, it's a great tourist sort of thing, and it's a great family event to go out fishing. So, you know, I know you promote kids' days sometimes and that sort of thing. I just wonder if there's anything in the works to try to get those numbers up.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, and Senator Drudd, we're certainly working on that. And under our agency strategic planning efforts, one of the key goals is to increase participation. If you look at just the raw numbers of participants, it's actually been stable for about a decade. But per capita, the decline continues. And for us, small changes, small increases in per capita participation can really mean a difference in the bottom line. In large part, our fixed costs are covered. So we're talking about recruiting customers that are on the margin and really add directly to the bottom line, both for operations of the department and our conservation program, but also just because we think it's a good recreational activity. So we are engaged in working on those and working with a number of entities. And in many cases, non-traditional entities, working with some of the folks in inner cities to really start promoting and exposing people to these activities. Most people, if you look at the surveys of individual participants, it usually takes someone to engage them. And if they've lost that family tradition, it's really important that we find ways to reignite that.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at KPM 6. I'm not familiar with the term unscreened water diversion. What is that?
Sure. Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, and Representative Lewis. So there's literally, I'm going to just make a number up, but tens of thousands of water diversions where water is diverted from streams for other purposes, whether it be agriculture or municipal water use. Now, those are the two big ones. Mm-hmm. Oregon actually has a lot. In fact, in the territorial constitution in 1849, the territorial constitution required fish passage, and for many, many years, there's been a state law that requires screening at diversions, and that's to prevent the entrainment, in particular of juvenile salmonids, but also trout, and prevent the entrainment of those fish into the irrigation delivery system, which then takes them out of the, you know, the productive population. So we've had a program for many decades. It's a cooperative program with landowners to, through cost share purposes, to help them screen their diversions. So they're not all screened yet. We still have unscreened diversions, and that's the nature of the KPM.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kathy Conley, if you could tell us what's going on with DAS there.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I'm Kathy Conley with Chief Financial Office, and I will just give you a brief overview of the governor's budget for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. This agency is, of course, very important within the governor's budget priority of ensuring that Oregonians have clean air and water. This is their expenditure history. You will see that in the governor's budget, there's actually a slight decrease in general fund for this agency and a slight increase in lottery funds. And you'll recall that lottery funds are primarily used for conservation work in the agency. The other funds increase is pretty substantial. It's about 14.5. And the big chunks of that are the $10.2 million for the maintenance package, the bonding package. There's $500,000 for redoing their roof and $100,000 for the overtime to increase winter range enforcement that comes from licensing and fees. There's also an increase in federal funds. That is, some of that is federal funds coming in and out with each biennium, so it includes their Voluntary Access and Habitat Initiative Program, the Willamette Wildlife Mitigation Program, but newer packages include the Oregon Deer Management and Monitoring Package and the NRCS Conservation Package, which will leverage lottery dollars with federal dollars. This is the expenditure, what they spend their money on, and as you can see, the big budget driver, of course, as you would anticipate, is their personal services, which is about over 50%. Services and supplies are a fairly large amount that supports their positions, but this is an agency that is very dispersed across the state, and so they have larger than normal costs for to maintain their buildings, to do IT, to do travel, all that sort of thing. Special payments, which is $29.6 million, about $24 million of that is their payment to the Oregon State Patrol, Fish and Wildlife Divisions. Their capital outlay is a little bigger than normal this time around, and that, again, can be attributed to the bonding package. Same with their debt service. This agency really carries very little debt, but the governor's budget assumes that there will be an early sale of the bonding, so there will be debt service. So, but normally they carry very little debt. Revenue sources, they use all kinds of revenue. General fund, Measure 76 lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds. The important thing to know about their revenue sources this time around is because of the fee increase that was approved in the last biennium, revenue-wise, they're in pretty good shape. They can meet their mission and responsibilities. They have restored their ending fund balance of about $40 million, which is actually very close to what it was in the 13-15. That will cover approximately 90 days of their operations, and that's considered good. I mean, that's kind of standard, but it's good standard. The agency already talked with you at length about their investments in the governor's budget. I just wanted to highlight again the investments in Measure 76 lottery fund, particularly that conservation position, because that does carry with it such large federal funds, and then the deferred maintenance. The reductions, you heard a lot of testimony about that, and there were some difficult reductions in predator control, services and supplies. We shifted hatcheries about a half million. No, I think it's about 700,000 off general fund and on to other fund. Again, that can be attributed to the fact that the agency is in pretty good shape revenue-wise. There was also a transfer of one technology position over to OSCIO to work on security, statewide security. Other items that we have, we are probably withdrawing package 115, which has to do with an e-procurement process that just isn't ready to go yet. It was a multiple agency effort. We did the usual statewide adjustments. And finally, we wanted to give you notice that there was an error made by the agency on their 13-15 budget, and they inadvertently reverted a half a million dollars in general fund back to the general fund. We are not asking for any action to be taken. We are simply giving you notice. We are not asking for it to be restored. And with that, unless there are any questions, that completes my presentation.
Are there any questions? Yes.
The half million that you just mentioned, what fund did that come out of?
The Columbia River Fisheries Transition Fund.
I do have some exception to that, but okay.
I would say that the agency still has 500,000 currently from the 15-17 biennium available in that fund, and the governor's budget does include 500,000 to be added to the fund in the 17-19 budget. And there has been no draw on the fund to date.
Thank you. Anyone else? No other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to mention that our office has been working with the department on reviewing their vacant positions and their federal funds limitation, and you're likely to see some significant reductions when we go to work session with vacant positions and federal funds limitation. There's a number of positions in limitation that just aren't being used, and so we're going to try to true up the budget when we go to work session. So just wanted to give you some advance notice that you'll probably be seeing a number of positions being eliminated and federal funds limitation that they don't need being eliminated as well. Also would note for the record that the co-chair detail of their framework that came out on Monday includes a reduction for the $500,000 that's in the governor's budget for the Columbia River Gillnet Mitigation Fund. So that would leave just $500,000 that's already in the fund in that fund for any future uses. And it also includes a reduction to the Western Oregon Stream Restoration Program.
Thank you. Yes, Representative.
Mr. Chair, there's a couple things I think that we should look at with this budget. One is I think we should pursue and find out whether we want to pursue the bottle situation where it's a penny or whatever it is, a bottle in a can, and reduce fees for people that are hunting and fishing and tags. The other thing I'd like to see us do is to ensure that this agency doesn't grow with the new income, but we get a comprehensive and an exact amount and inventory of what needs to be done for deferred maintenance. We have millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars here that are being deferred, the maintenance, which eventually we're going to have to pay the piper. But I've always found out if you don't stay on top of it, you pay two or three or four times more. And that's what we're in that same situation, because I think we're around, correct me if I'm wrong, Director Melcher, we're about $40 or $50 million in deferred maintenance, pretty close, give or take. But I'd like a list. I'd like a prioritized list. I'd like to see that's done in dollars so we can know what our target is. But I'd like to see us pursue that with their budget, those two items.
Is that a prioritized list as well, not just the, yep. Not just the list? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. I just was wondering, Representative Esquivel, I completely agree that we have to keep on top of maintenance for all agencies, regardless of their natural resource ones. I'm just curious about what would the revenue stream be for that. My understanding is that they haven't had the. I'm just wondering how we would address the revenue stream.
Mr. Chair, may I? Yes, Senator. We had a committee that went out and determined that we would be able to let everyone in the state of Oregon, which is their responsibility because everyone owns the wildlife, mm-hmm. that they would add on a 1 or 2 cent per bottle and per can, yeah. but we'd have to have that in place before we could go to the maintenance. But I would like to know what the target is.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for Director Melcher. Thank you very much for the presentation. And Kathy Connolly, you're always here doing this thing. I appreciate that. So I think what I'm going to do is we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5010. And we'll close the committee meeting, adjourn the committee meeting on natural resources for today. Thank you.
Even though he's in a
natural resources for today. Thank you.
Even though he's in a